Jim Love is the founder of Authentically You. He's a motivational speaker who inspires students for the next level of leadership. Through personal stories and high energy, he aims to help students be motivated to be authentic, confident, and servant leaders. He is, in fact, as you would imagine, very authentic. Take a listen.
All right, Jim Love, welcome to What's the Mood. It's great to have you on our podcast today.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I'm excited, and it's going to be a good day. I'm looking forward to it.
I agree. So let's just start out. I know you do a lot of speaking. The word on the street through my team is how dynamic of a speaker you are, workshop presenter. How did you find your way, Jim, to this place of passion and work?
Yeah, you know, I've always wanted to do it since I was in high school. And I actually saw, when I was 16, I saw a speaker. His name's Arik, and he's an international speaker. And I just, you know, I thought he was like a giant, right? When I saw him, like, this guy's awesome. And I want to do that. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I want to do what he's doing and the way he made me feel and just how much fun he was having. And then about 10 years later, he became my mentor and kind of walked me through what that would be. And I saw speakers throughout high school and college, and some were boring, you know, some were fine. Like, I never wanted to be the one that's going to make you yawn or going to, you know, like, if I'm going to do the thing, I'm going to have a good time doing it, you know, and that's the way I've always looked at it. So Arik is very high energy. I model a lot of what I do after him, but it's truly because I'm enjoying it. If I were to go up and just, you know, throw a piece of paper on a pulpit and just be like, hey, everyone, you know, good morning, like, that's not fun. Like, I like to kind of get, you know, goofy, and that's who I am at my core. So what you see when I present is me, and I enjoy doing that. But the good part about that is that my message is about being authentic. And so that's what I'm showing. You know, it's kind of like a nice, say, strategic way to be like, if I'm doing it, you can do it too. You know, so it took a little while to get really comfortable in doing that. But after, you know, maybe 10 or 15 talks, I finally was like, okay, I found my own thing and can do it. And I know, like, when I'm having a good time, if the students are reacting, you know, in a positive way, that actually gives me more energy, and I'm able to really tune in to those emotions, you know, I have. And I mean, truly, like, my talk goes on a roller coaster. You know, it's fun things, funny things at times, it's sad things at times, really vulnerable things. So I kind of go along this journey, but I have to start with these students being into it, being engaged, and, you know, being ready to rock. And then every 15 minutes, like, I do an activity. Like, I have a really bad attention span, and I'm 34. For 17-year-olds, they have way worse than I do. So I just got to keep them motivated and engaged. And it's fun. Like, it's a good time, and I want to make sure that vibe is set. But I definitely modeled it after Arik and what he did, and then I kind of found my own flair as a one on. And it's truly a good time. Like, I can't emphasize that enough, that, like, when I go up, I'm enjoying myself. And if I didn't, I don't think I would do this work anymore. You know, like, if the day where it becomes like, I gotta go do that again, you know, I'm too tired, like, that's when it's just not a passion. So I very much found, I love the word passion. I also use the word vocation. You know, it's very much where I'm supposed to be. And all that said, like, when I have that feeling, it's really hard to replicate anywhere else in my life. So yeah, it really came down to it. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And I went and I tried to do it. And awesome. Here we are.
So you were 16, you saw this speaker, and it sparked something in you where you're like, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. You pursued that, which I'm guessing had to have been some highs and lows along the way, you know, for 30, what did you say you are? 34?
Like, 34. Yeah.
Over 20 years of a passion and desire, and the messages around authenticity. So modeling it and then inspiring that in others to be themselves. Is that?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, to your point on the highs and lows, it's a good one, because I remember the first talk I gave was, oddly enough, the gentleman I mentioned, Arik, he double booked himself for an event. And he was like, well, I can't make it, but someone else can. And I was so nervous, you know, it was like the first thing I did, but there was 300 students. They were rocking around. It had nothing to do with me. Let's just say that these students were already in a really good mood, and it was awesome. I felt like a rock star. Like, I was like, this is how it's always going to be. I'm going to sell out Madison Square Garden next. Right. And then the next talk I gave was 5 people, and it wasn't like that. Right. So it was kind of like this humbling moment of like, like, maybe the quantity of the people doesn't matter, but the quality and who you reached, you know, does. And it was very clear that I had to impact one person, you know, after that. And that's what it should turn into. Now, it became more than that. And certainly, you know, I've experienced a lot of them, but definitely highs and lows. I mean, the lowest of lows was certainly COVID and not being able to do this anymore. And kind of like all the things I had built, you know, had crumbled a little bit. And I didn't really have an outlet, so I just started doing some free virtual stuff. You know, whatever, whoever I can talk to, whenever I could talk to is what I did. But all that said, like the load of being a high, the high was definitely that these messages I've had for a while of authenticity, of like positive energy, of self-love and self-care and mental health journeys were really validated during that time. Everything I really kind of stood for and had hope that people would grasp onto, I was grasping onto for dear life, you know, in 2020, and being like, this is what's going to get me through it. So that was a really unique time. It was really emotional, of course, for a number of reasons, but specifically for this work I do, was like, oh wow, maybe this actually means something, and I held on to all of it. And then the folks I really had reached out to at that time remembered me, you know, in 2021 and 2022 when we all started coming back. So it was great. It actually worked itself out. But the journey is a real one. It's fun. I find a lot of joy in it, and it's not always going to be, you know, great, but I go full throttle into it. You know, I give 110%, and usually
Yeah.
that's what comes out of it.
That's awesome. So, you know, at the Human Performance Project, we are prevention based. And I know your mom, when you were in high school, I think she worked in prevention. How did your like lens of experience through prevention through her, how has that shaped maybe who you are and even how you do some of the talks and the vocation work that you part of?
Yeah, a great deal. I mean, the first and foremost thing is my mom ran Snowball and Snowflake at my school. And for those that don't know, it's a one day, you know, retreat that's was really more about drug and alcohol prevention for a long time, and now has become more about self-acceptance. And my talk just fits into that day so well. So I got exposed to that as early as like fourth grade. Of her doing these things, because you know she had to watch me, right? She's my mom, so I had to be there, and that was so critical. And I kind of saw people on stage, I saw people leading groups and having a good time doing it. And I didn't, you know, when you're 12 or 10 or whatever age, like it doesn't seem that cool, you know, right away. You're kind of like, I don't know what these people are, but I had so much experience and exposure to it that I started filling in those roles going into, I think, eighth grade was maybe the first time I started it, and then all throughout high school, and then certainly having, you know, a built-in obviously person, her being my mom, like it was I got to go all the time. It was fun, and so those, you know, not only did like just the whole sort of idea of prevention was a big deal, but just being involved in that atmosphere and environment, that's really where I enjoyed being. And then I was like, wow, as I'm speaking more, this talk and these messages I gave fit into this day really well. And then that became a thing I did, you know, so like Snowball is, I do a bunch of retreats a year. I love doing it. It's so easy. I almost like it's just like a day where I know what's going to happen. You know, like I show up and I know what the crowd will be. I know the teachers that do it now. And it's kind of interesting. My mom, who's now retired as of last year, like these teachers taking over who are my age a lot of times, right? Like totally remind me of her. You know, like it's just a very similar personality of people that do this work and are really into it. And so I get to give my talk and kind of be there for it. And it really brings me back to being, you know, 14 and leading these groups as an eighth grader. So it's total full circle. One that I never really expected. I wasn't like, I want to get into this to, you know, do the same thing as what, you know, my mom did. Like that's not something that was ever in my mind, but it just sort of went that way. And that experience was so pivotal. And it's great because like when I finish, when I get to call my mom and be like, oh yeah, we did the Snowflake thing. And she knows exactly what I'm talking about. You know, so it's like a commonality. Because I guess another point, like not many people totally get this world of speaking. You know, it's one that's different, particularly the way that I do it. Like I have a network of friends that are speakers, and we call each other and we totally get it. But I don't blame people for not getting it, because it's just a very unique thing. You know, like not many people are spending a Tuesday morning with 300 high school students. It's just not like a typical thing you do. So there's just not a ton of like, oh, I get that, or like, how was your day? You know, that type of thing. And so it's really cool to have that commonality, and you find some community in it. But yeah, to your original question, 100%, that's been a huge part of what I do. And just being exposed to it really early on was so critical and continues to be. And I find myself doing like this nostalgic loop, you know, when I'm at these places of like, I remember where I got started, and it's fun to now be in this realm giving back in a way.
Yeah, that's cool. Recently, we partnered with you in McLean County and Project Oz, and there was an acronym. I think it was ERAS,
That's
ERAS.
right. Yeah, era. Yeah,
Yeah, it
it's
hit
yeah.
hard. So, would you mind sharing a bit about that message, how that
Totally.
formed for you here?
Totally. First of all, yes, it is a node or a nod to Taylor Swift. So that I want to throw it out there. That's a thing that exists, and we can all admit that. That's good. So I'm not a Swiftie. Let me just be like, I'm not like someone who's going to go to a concert, but I certainly turn it up in my car on Spotify when I'm driving to a, you know, a talk. And that morning I did. So there we are. But ERA in of itself is an acronym. It stands for, basically it talks about how to use your voice. And I talk about using your leadership ERA. This is the ERA to go with. And it's enthusiastically, relentlessly, and authentically. So those three words, and they're really critical. And honestly, as a lot of my other parts of my keynote have evolved, this was, I remember when I did it, I remember when I came up with it, it was in my living room as I was practicing for a talk. I think it was about 5 years ago. And and every now and then when I practice, and by the way, I practice before every, given 100 some odd keynotes, I practice for every one of them. It's the process is always the same, and it will continue to be for years. But the reason why I do it is not because of like timing and just getting, you know, a couple things down. But I was going off script, you know, as I was doing this. I got really into it. I was by myself in my living room, so this is the life of a speaker. But I remember really getting into that section and just starting to talk about like be enthusiastic about it, like be driven and relentless about it, and be, you know, be, and then I was like, oh, that spells something, you know. And then I started thinking and writing, and I remember I sat down for like 20 minutes and wrote out that thing, and then it became a thing. I was like, this works. And I would say like 90% of my talk has been like that. Like I'll just start practicing it and something comes up. So 100% that was just like kind of a spur of the moment, matched up with what, you know, an ERA could be. And this was like right around the time when T Swift like blew up. So like that, you know, it was like clearly ERA was in my head as I was doing it. But I remember it came out that way. As I do a lot of things when they're new, I grab some folks who are very close friends of mine that will be honest with me, and I practice it on them. So my roommate at the time, I got him, and I was like, hey, can you just listen to this? Tell me what you think. He was like, that's great. And if it wasn't, he would have been honest, you know. So that worked out well. And then wrote it down. I had a talk 2 days later, tried it out, and it went over really well. And now it's kind of become a part of what I do. So yeah, that really tied a knot around the point I was making with having a voice. And you know, to your point, a lot of folks have grasped onto that. I think it's really digestible. It's obviously, you know, fun with the ERA thing, and then it totally like drives home the three points I really want to drive home. So I spend a lot more time on that now, and it actually has, it's extended my time by like 10 minutes, you know, where now I have to like keep that in mind when I have a time limit of like better make sure that's a thing. So yeah, that one's huge. I love it, and I think it really sort of like brings together this point of having your leadership ERA be your voice, and you know what that means, and you know, importantly, to be excited, to be driven, and to be really authentic in doing it.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm glad that that obviously stuck for your group, and it sounds like it has the last couple of years too.
Yeah. Is it true? Did you recently have a daughter?
Yes, about 3 weeks
So I'm calling it right here, Jim. Like, you may very well one day be at a T Swift concert.
That's a good point. No, I'll take that one. Yeah, I thought about that, and I was like, this is a good reason to go to. Now, all that said, I would go without a daughter. So let's be
Yeah, that's
honest. But
great.
yes, Eleanor is three, about coming on 3 weeks old, and
For
I'm
sure.
tired, so I'm faking it till I make it right in the last
Yeah.
job. But it's good. It's been
Cool.
really good.
A couple of things you said that piqued my interest, like your message that about authenticity is kind of foundational on like self-love and self-care. I'm hearing there's a lot of practice and preparation that goes into, you know, being able to show up wherever you're being invited to bring this message. How do you work through your own self-love and self-care in order to, you know, like bring the best you have? Like, you know, performance, human performance is a big definition we use, which is like showing up as your best self that day, which can be different day to day, I think, which brings in that authenticity piece. But what are some of the ways that you incorporate this type of self-love and self-care in a way that comes out in who you show up as?
I love that question. You have a really good point. It's sometimes hard to do this. You know, I actually think so. A good example recently where I really had to pull off that type of mindset was last week. I was at a student conference in Illinois. I had to give two keynotes, and this was like right in the thick of being, you know, a parent. I forgot how tired I was. Honestly, I showed up. I was excited. The first keynote was awesome. I had like a blast, and then I was like, oh my gosh, I am drained. Like I'm totally drained, right? And I had to find it for round two. Like I was giving the same talk to a whole different group of people. So the best example, like, is just recency bias. As I was like finishing that, I go in the bathroom and I kind of just like sit down real quick and I'm like, it's for the kids. Like it's for them. It's not for you. It's for them. So like, I always go back to how I felt when I was 16, seeing Ark, you know, in that mindset and how critical that was for me. And so bringing all this back, when I speak to students, I have like an audience avatar that I use. And the reason why I came up with this is because it's easy to be distracted by students that, you know, may not be engaged or whatever it will be. But when you look at a crowd, this is like the whole science behind speaking. You try to see one person. And the person I look for is me when I was 16, because that's who I'm speaking to. It's like the person who needed to hear it. So I went back to that as I was a week ago, like trying to get into the mind, you know, mode of doing it. And I was like, what do I need to hear? And I'm like, I need to go there and I need to turn up, you know, for these students. And so the self-love and self-care part, to be honest, doing this talk is a lot of that for me, because it's something that really gives me energy and it's something that's really therapeutic. You know, I talk about a lot of deep stuff, which is not easy, but it's important, and it's something that is kind of like a therapy session for me. So like I've certainly drained when I'm done, but it feels really good to share it and relate to it. So the whole thing in of itself is helpful for me. I have a pretty deep faith life, so prayer is a big part of my life, and I certainly, you know, put that into this. But I think when it comes down to it, like I always think about what do they need, and you just find another gear, you know. So I went out. I was actually losing my voice. Like I was legit tired. It's going down. My voice is going. But then after, you know, 10, 15 years, you kind of get creative in all of this. So I found a way to bring the students down to me and not have to shout so loud. You just do stuff that works and you get them going. But yes, I really sat there and I had to dig deep. I was tired. Like I would have totally gone home then. You know, like I was exhausted. But I'm like, it's time to go out there and do it for them. And so when I get out there, of course I'm nervous and I'm pacing back and forth. The first 5 minutes is like a lot of nervous energy of doing that. And then I get settled in and I do the thing, you know, and I go for it. So the thing is, like, there's no other option. Like, it's not like I could just be like, I'm just going to take this one off. Like, if I'm going to do my thing, I'm going to do my thing. You know, like I don't have like an off switch when it comes to that. So I just had to find it. I listened to some music, actually Andy Grammer, one of my favorite artists, but the song Damn It Feels Good to Be Me is like that's a good pump up one. It sounds like arrogant that that's the title, but it's really more of like, let's do this. And this is how I feel about the students more so. It's like, let's get you in a place where you feel really confident. So I did all of those things a week ago, and it took a while. It took probably 15 minutes, which is an eternity for like sitting in a bathroom and like finding, you know, where you're at. And did it, got out there, did the thing, was, you know, almost fell asleep on the ride home, but it was worth it. And so there's moments where I'm like, you know, I had a rough week. I'm not feeling it, but I dig deeper and I know why I got into this. And that's, you know, the why is really what matters. I know that sounds cliche, and I'm sure a lot of other people, you know, say those types of things, but that's what I went into. I went into the why, and it worked. You know, it was like I did the thing, got home, was, you know, beside myself, tired, but was so worth it. So all that said, like, I have these small things that have been built up over, you know, the last 10 or 15 years that like I go back to, and it really translates into what am I going to do here and now. And then I'm really present. Like the phone's put away until I'm taking pictures later, but I'm there for them. I kind of read the room and go on this journey with them, and it all comes together. So that was like verbal diarrhea, but I hope that made sense for
Totally.
how it all
Yeah,
comes
it
together.
totally does. And I appreciate, you know, the authenticity around that. And I'm even kind of struck, like, you know, I had shared with you before we recorded, I've got like a 2-week-old puppy and you have a 2-week-old daughter, you know, human versus animal. However, like we have a little shared reality of maybe some exhaustion and newness to be navigating.
No doubt. Hey, from someone with a puppy, it's real. It's
Yeah.
very, it's a real thing. They're both living beings, and
Yeah.
they're tiring.
Yeah, I
It's
know
no
there's a
doubt.
value in like the power of continuing to learn and craft, you know, like recraft in order to connect with youth, understand that, you know, like the role is an important one and it carries a lot of weight and responsibility. What are the ways that you continue to learn and engage with like new ideas or ways to keep finding ways to connect with youth as they evolve, we evolve, the world evolves.
It's hard. I'll give you one funny one and one, you know, very real one. The funny one's also real, but either way, every year I do a leadership seminar, kind of pro bono, that I've been doing since I was 16. It's called the Wisconsin Leadership Seminars, and it's a 3-day seminar. It's very, very intentional about bringing one student from each school, and that gets nominated. I got nominated when I was in high school, and now it's become a big part of my life. But the moral of the story, I speak at it certainly, but I also lead a group of students throughout the weekend, and I get really close to those students because we're together 24/7. And I quite literally ask them what's in and what's out these days, and it's like my refresher every year. And it's kind of a joke, but it's also kind of serious. I'll run stuff by them. This is the cream of the crop kids. They'll be real with me as we go into it. So I come out of that weekend with like, okay, I know what's going, I know what's important, what words are at, like just all these different types of things where like where's their head at. I ask them about like what are they struggling with. Like I get very honest with them, and it's obviously helpful. So that is my refresher every June, is to come away with like a sense of it. But the other part, and more importantly, probably, is students will always relate to authentic. That's really what it is. A 16 and 17 year old will call you out right away if you're not being real. So for me, I early on, I'd say a big thing that changed in my career, I was trying to be this like perfect speaker, this someone that will come out flawless. And that never worked. Like it's like you're gonna make mistakes, and students don't relate to perfect. They relate to authentic. And so when I'm out there, I try to just be me and enjoy it and call myself out. Like I've had times where I use note cards because I have ADD, and if I didn't, I would go all over the place. And one time I like skipped part of my note card that was super critical, and I just like totally, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in the wrong spot. Made a joke about it, like went back, did the thing, and moved out. Like you just make it work. And I found that the more I do that, the more relatable I am. And they're not relating to this like enigma of a human. Like I'm a real person, and I'm always going to be that way. And some students may look at me as like a speaker or something, but at the end of the day, when I connect with them, like they don't call me Mr. Love, they call me Jim, like that, like all these small things that just kind of make you like a human. So I have never really had a problem relating to students. And I'm just going to say that sentence out loud. It's just something I enjoy doing. I'm still a 17-year-old at heart. Like I always will be, like the kid that just wants to be accepted. That's like how it is. And that will never change. That's probably why I got into this work. But I talk to students like they're humans, like they're adults. Like I really want their opinion on stuff. And I mean, we go on a journey together. And so when I share things with them that are really vulnerable, they feel like they're welcome to do that with me as well. So I connect with a lot of them on different levels. I really love doing that. It's always weird for me when I have to leave after like an hour, and it's like, well, that was great. It's good to talk to you, but I'm out. I can only be a resource to a certain degree. So it's kind of, it's got its ups and downs. But definitely, I get myself every June into a place where I'm like, where am I at? Am I talking to kids? And then each time you go out with these students, like you pick up something new. Someone says something, and it's whatever term it might be, and you roll with it. But I've always found myself just being authentic with them and showing them how to do it, and then allowing them the space to also do that. So that may sound like simplistic, but it's just something that's always worked. And I haven't ever like gone back to the drawing board, so to say, of like how do I do this now? Like it's been a long time, and it's worked, and it's more fun that way. And I definitely. I've like so for example, like I used to quote Miley Cyrus in my talk. I don't do that as much anymore. She's not as big. Quoted One Direction for a long time. Maybe not as big, like small things like that where I'm like, that probably won't land, but a geometry joke always lands. I'm not a big geometry fan, and every student hates geometry. So we can always get that. Yeah, shout out to the math teachers and majors. But anyway, it's just some things where I just like, oh, that probably won't work anymore. But like totally when I first started doing this in 2015, One Direction was like a jam. And they're not anymore. And I'm unfortunately, of course, one passed, but like there's just so many things that have changed. But like those are like 5% of what I do. The 95% is very much just being there with them. So yeah, I keep myself relevant, certainly, but I also don't change who I am, and that's the crux of my message. So it's kind of one goes hand in hand.
And I hear you. I mean, we go into schools all over Illinois, and teens can smell inauthenticity like before you're there for 5 seconds, right? And I think even though the question was all about like how do you craft and learn different ways to connect because of the evolution, I think authenticity is timeless, right? So
Totally.
to your point, like that is a very foundational, remains the same way to connect with anybody,
Yeah.
right?
No, and actually to your specific question, crafting wise, there's no doubt that I changed parts of my keynote over the years. The era part, was an example. Like there's things I add in, things I subtract, not always beforehand, sometimes in the moment where I'm just like, this for this particular crowd, it's not going to land. And I'm always thinking three lines ahead. So when I'm speaking, I'm thinking about what's the next thing. It's an exhausting way to do it, but like you kind of have to be thinking that way. I'll skip something where I'm just like, this group may not identify with that. Like I won't give my Chicago references when I'm in, Pennsylvania, like just stuff like that where that won't work, So I think it's more, that's probably more of my life of stuff leading up hand where I'm practicing and really preparing, and I write out before I get up there, I always write out the intro and that does change. I could do an intro of like, do the school's fight song or, do the way, like whatever that is. And I'll always craft that prior of what the school is like. And then in the moment, that's what I enjoy the most is off the cuff of what I'm going to do. A week ago, like a chant was working really well. So I did it three more times. It's like, just go for it. So that's mine's more of that than it is like having to change year in and year out. But the keynote itself does evolve, in small ways. And then when I'm there and I'm reading the room, it certainly evolves it depending on what I think is going to work. And I'm not always right. Sometimes stuff doesn't land and I thought it would. But, usually when I can read it, I'm like, this is going to go well. And you just try it, and
That's
see what
great.
happens. And then if it doesn't work, you make fun of yourself because it's way more fun that way.
That's great. Cool. I think I'll end with this question, Jim. Little Eleanor, I know you're, a father 2 weeks in here, but like when she's older and she gets to experience her dad in all these years, like how would you want her to know her dad? Like what would you want her to say about you as a human, the way you invested your time and life in your vision and who you were as a person?
I'd say that I really cared about students and human beings like accepting themselves. That's the biggest thing. So I hope that she knows she can, be whatever leader she wants to be or do whatever activity she wants to get into. But I really loved, I'm saying that like past, I'm really, really, really love making students feel important and helping develop them as leaders and that they, they don't have to be like a title to be a leader. So hope that she's really embarrassed by some of the things that's the goal, right? But then kind of sees that this is a line of work that's really important to me that is fun and hopefully makes a difference. And maybe one day she'll be in the crowd for it. You never know. But that's something I hope that she, sees that journey, enjoyed it. And I also hope to be doing this for a long time. I know at some point I won't be relatable to high school students. So to get ready for whenever that day is. But until then, I will keep doing it and hope to bring, a daughter along for the journey whenever that time comes.
Acceptance, the message of acceptance and helping young adults like find that within themselves. That's a really worthwhile investment of your life and work. And I know at the Human Performance Project, we've really enjoyed partnering with you and look forward to the future of those things. And thank you for just your time and the authentic conversation.
Of course, I appreciate all the work y'all do, and I'm looking forward to doing a whole lot more in the future with you guys. So thank you.
Thank you.